And let me start by thanking the LGBT Caucus for sponsoring this event. It's a pleasure to be here with my colleagues. And today I'm going to give a talk on demographic differences in sexual risk-taking of young, gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men. I want to acknowledge my collaborators on this project, Robert Moeller and Daniel Sikanoffi, who directed the project and wrote the initial grant with me and really are the heart and soul of the work here. And also my collaborators at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, in particular Blaine Cutler and Sarah Rockwell. So what we know about HIV in the United States is that the disease disproportionately affects men who have sex with men. Men who have sex with men constitute more than 50% of infections, new infections, and age-related deaths. Yet by any estimate that we have, those who identify as gay men are 2%, maybe 5% upper limit of the population. So there's a huge disparity in terms of the disease in the MSM population. Between 2001 and 2006, we saw an uptick in New York City in new diagnoses of HIV in young men who have sex with men, those ages 13 to 19, a 50% increase, and in 13 to 29, a 33% increase. And when you look at that data a little bit more closely, what we saw was that the new infections were predominantly lodged in two segments of the YMSM population, black YMSM, who constituted 100, who demonstrated 120%, 26% increase in infections, and Hispanic YMSM, who constituted, showed an 81% increase in infections. So there was a concern on the part of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene about the rise in new infections that we were seeing in 13 to 29-year-olds, in particular in black and Latino 13 to 29-year-olds. And as a result of that, the DOH put out an RFA asking for investigators to think about HIV prevention strategies for this segment of the population. So in response to that RFA, we put together a project which we called Project Desire. We called the project Desire because we really believe that what we wanted to get to in this research was the role that desire played in the lives of these young men to try to understand their sexual risk-taking behavior, rather take it more outside the traditional social cognitive paradigms that have guided HIV prevention research for the last 30 years, and really look at the emotional aspects of HIV, of sex, and in turn HIV infection in the lives of these young men. That is one component of the study that we did through our qualitative interviews. So essentially, what we wanted to do was to document the risk behaviors in this segment of the population, to determine associated risk factors with unprotected sex in this population, to determine access to HIV prevention services for YMSM, and to determine HIV prevention needs. So we did a study that consisted of three phases. Phase one was a street survey utilizing palm pilots of the segment of the sample that was 18 to 29. We did 540 street surveys consisting of about 110 questions, with two-thirds of the sample being black, Latino, or Asian Pacific Islander, and the remainder third being white. Then in phase two, we sampled 10% of the quantitative phase one sample to do discovery interviews. And these discovery interviews were based on a methodology called the listening guide that was developed and is used extensively by our colleague, Carol Gilligan. It's a very interesting technique. It really asks one to look not only at the words that individuals are using to describe their behaviors, but also to look at the changes in logic and in thought patterns, and to look at the underlying logic that sort of underlies their experiences. You know, try to make sense of what seems to the world or might seem to some as something that is irrational actually has a ration and a reason in the lives of these young men. And those interviews are really interesting. And actually, Rob, who's sitting in the back of the audience there, has a paper coming out in Journal of Homosexuality that sort of describes a small segment of what we discovered in those interviews. Then in phase three, we conducted survey and discovery-based interviews with another sample of 40 men who were ages 13 to 17. And we had to do this sample separate from the other sample because we required parental assent for these young men to be in our study. And we use IRB is very difficult. As I said, we used PDAs to administer the surveys, and the participants received a cash incentive for approximately 10 to 15 minutes of their time. The data was then downloaded from the PDAs and exported into SPSS for analysis. The measures that I'm going to talk about today that I use in our analysis are the age and the race, self-identified race ethnicity of these young men, age at their first same-sex behaviors, And then we looked at, when we gathered data on their most recent sexual behaviors, we looked at episodic sexual behaviors, looking at their most recent casual partner sex acts. And if they had a main partner, we looked at their most recent partner and the sexual acts within that interaction. We captured information on the actual behaviors in the episode, the partner's race, ethnicity, and the partner's age, because we believe that, and we actually captured a lot of other contextual factors, including where they met their partner and what have you, that I will not be reporting on today. But we believe that we really wanted to look at all of the elements related to the sexual episode rather than just simple addition of adding a number of unprotected acts over the last 3 months to really get a holistic picture of the behaviors of these young men. This is a sample of our recruiting materials. You can see what we used for phase two. After the men completed the survey, the 18 to 29-year-olds, we handed them one of these palm cards and asked them if they were interested in being in the interview, and they called in and they screened in phase three for the younger men, something a little less graphic that helped us recruit that sample of 40. So my goals of my analysis today that I'm going to present to you are to describe the lifetime and recent sexual risk-taking behaviors of YMSM, and to delineate the interactive effects of race ethnicity with partner characteristics in exploring these behavioral patterns. The sample was 580 men at the beginning. Inclusion criteria were that they were, in this analysis, 13 to 29. They had to have had same-sex behavior in the 6 months prior to assessment. So based on all of these criteria, our final analytic sample actually ended up being 558 because a subset of the men had not had same-sex behavior in the last 6 months. This is a chart that shows age at first sex by age group, being broken down. But what I'm not going to from now on call three groups: the adolescent groups, who are 13 to 17, the emerging adult groups who are 18 to 24, and the young adult groups that are 25 to 29. And this chart does show that the adolescents and the emerging adults are having sex at a younger age, but I caution the finding in this chart because one of the criteria for actually being in the study was to have had sex in the last 6 months. So by design, the adolescent men and the emergent adult men would seem younger at the onset of their sex, but nonetheless, interesting to note that. When we looked then at specific acts, age at first sex, by looking at oral intercourse, we found an effect with black men reporting a younger age than the Asian Pacific Islander men, Latino men reporting a younger age at first oral intercourse than either white men or API men. And I will note that in this analysis, we adjusted for the age of the men to control for it, their current age. When we looked at age at first sex insertive anal intercourse, again, we had a strong effect with black men, again, reporting a younger age than the Asian Pacific Islander men, and the Latino men, again, reporting a younger age than the white and the Asian Pacific Islander men. And then finally, we looked at age at first sex, receptive anal intercourse, and again, a very similar pattern here with the black men in this case reporting a younger age than both the white men and the API men, and the Latino men reporting a younger age than both the white men and the API men. So we're starting to get scratch the surface and see that maybe that one of the factors that is at play here is the onset of sexual behavior of the young black and Latino men that might explain why we see the heightened rates of HIV infection in that segment of the population, one of many factors, I believe. So then we looked at the most recent sexual behavior by age group, and the only difference that we saw here was that in the young adults there was a higher likelihood of engaging in insertive anal intercourse. But in terms of oral intercourse, receptive anal intercourse, the adolescents and emergent adults and the young adults were equally likely to have engaged in that behavior with their last casual partner. The young adults slightly more likely to have insertive anal intercourse. This is a chart that shows casual partners in the 3 months prior to the assessment, broken down by age group and by race ethnicity. And what we see is that there is no effect for age or race ethnicity. So the black and Latino men are not having more partners than the API men or the white men. This is a chart that shows last casual sex partner by age. And what's interesting here is that when you look at oral insertive intercourse, and one of the patterns we see is that the white men are more likely to engage in oral sex with their last casual partner than the black men in our sample. But the black men are more likely to engage in receptive anal intercourse with their casual partner than the white men in the sample. When we look at the concordance of the sample in relation to the age of the partner, there's a high level of association across race ethnicity with the age of their partner. So it's not like they're having men who are very different in their age from themselves. This is a chart of odds ratios that looks at the racial concordance of the young men with their sexual partners. And as you can see, other than the Latino men who have an odds ratio of about a 1 and the API men who are less likely to choose same race partners, both the black men and the white men are highly likely to choose same race partners. So they're sorting potentially on the race of their partner. There might be some pseudo-sorting behavior, as the literature indicates, but I think there's actually some kind of racial sorting that goes on, too, when we look at the behaviors of these young men. With main partners, 45% of the young men reported a main partner in 3 months prior to assessment, and 53% of those were still in a relationship at the time of the survey. No differences emerged with the type of sex with main partners. And again, there was a high level of concordance between participant and partner age, race ethnicity, and self-reported HIV status. So to summarize here, what I think the takeaway messages are here, and this paper is described much more elaborately in a paper that just came out in JADES, is that YMSM, if we're thinking about HIV prevention messages and HIV prevention approaches from YMSM, we cannot treat them as a monolithic group. I like the fact that we're starting to think about young men and their prevention needs separate from the needs of the 30-year-olds and the 40-year-olds and the 50-year-olds. We don't really think about them, but we should be thinking about them too. That's my other line of research. But also to look at really consider the differences that exist in terms of the cultural experiences and the race ethnicity of these young men, and not to treat them as a monolith. And adolescents and emerging adults at this time point may be at greater risk for HIV behaviors because of earlier sexual onset. I would venture to say from this data, and I think this is pretty true if you look at other research studies too, is that black and Latino YMSM are not at greater risk because they have more sexual activity. They are not having more partners than the white men, right? Black and Latino men may be, and these are my hypotheses, at greater risk because their sexual onset is at an earlier age than the other groups, so the window, the opportunity, right, for infection is greater. They're more likely, the black men in particular, to engage in unprotected receptive anal intercourse with their casual partners. And what I really think is going on here is that there's a greater likelihood of choosing a partner that matches race ethnicity. So what does that mean to us? What that means to us is that if you're a young black man and you're choosing another young black man as your sexual partner, and you're likely to engage with him in unprotected receptive anal intercourse, and we know that the viremic pool is more concentrated in the young black population than the young white population, then the likelihood of young black men for seroconverting is greater than the likelihood of young white men for seroconverting. And then I think that the phenomenon that you end up seeing with the white men in terms of HIV prevention is that in their 30s, you see the spike in new infections in white men. And I would argue that at that point, the viremic pool increases in that segment of the population. They're still sorting on race, and they're, as a result of that, more likely to seroconvert in their 30s than in their teens and 20s. And I think the young black and Latino men eventually plateau. The white men stay relatively low, and then we see the spike in their 30s. So the implications for HIV prevention in my mind are that we need to attend to the issue of sexual debut and sexual onset, and that we need to think carefully about how sex education, including education about same-sex partners, needs to happen at an earlier age. Given the racial concordant partnering, we need to attend to the concentration of HIV viremia in the YMSM population, especially in the black and Latino population, by testing, treating, and retaining in care. Interestingly, in this analysis of this data set, we found also that the black and Latino men were much more likely to have tested for HIV than the white or API men, right? So they're testing more frequently, right? But they're not necessarily being treated and retained in care after they've tested. And it actually just came from an interesting panel at GMHC that the DOH sponsored. Interesting sort of idea that maybe this notion of ongoing treating is being morphed into a prevention strategy by these young men, where what we really need to be doing is actually educating them more about the meaning of the test. I can't tell you the number of young men don't understand the difference between an antibody test and a viral load test. The number of young men who don't understand that if they got infected yesterday, the antibody test is not going to show up positive today. And I think that we, 30 years ago, when I was a young man, there was a lot of emphasis on education and thinking about what all these things mean. And I think we've sort of let go of that, and I think it's time to sort of come back to that and really educate a new generation who is not like my generation and has very different needs than my generation around issues of HIV. So, and as always, I think there's a need to address risk reduction strategies with casual partners. It's pretty clear from this data set that the young white men are using risk reduction strategies with their casual partners. They're having oral sex with their casual partners, whereas the black men are not are more likely to have anal sex. So thinking about that strategy in terms of trying to reduce the HIV infections in the segment of the population. That's all I have to say to you today. Thank you very much.